Ahoy hoy, Patreon Arenos, and welcome to Talking Simpsons Season 4 Spectacular.
Oh,
this is a Patreon exclusive, meaning you paid for this. Who else is here with me? I'm Bob Mackie, by the way.
Hey, it's Henry Gilbert. Hello, everybody. Boy, I'm on just high after the thing we just recorded.
It's true. Yeah. Like what the non-patrons will be getting, and we deliberated on that. Didn't want to hide it from patrons because it's too cool.
It's too good to hide.
So, I think simultaneously an interview with Bill Oakley will be hitting your feeds.
Or you will have heard it at this point.
I just desperately want, like, I cannot. I looked at our episodes. We've only been doing this like a year and a half.
Yeah.
But we're into the fifth season. And it's like, obviously, because The Simpsons takes breaks in between their season and we don't get to.
Yeah, 3 months off per year. We don't do that, though. Mm-hmm. So where do we want to start with this? This is kind of wrapping up season four, talking about news, where the writers went, clips. How do we want
to
do this?
I only had like to shed light on season five. I didn't know this, and I'm sure we said this, and I just overlooked it. The first chalkboard gag of season five is I will never win an Emmy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so I did a thing this time that I want to do every season wrap up, mm-hmm. and I wish I could go back in time and put it in the old ones. Mm-hmm. So there's archived news everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like lots of things have archived news, but I went to the Variety.com.
Wow.
And the Daily Variety has, as far as I can tell, archived like everything mm-hmm. it ever did. And you can search by name. Mm-hmm. And so I went to everything that said The Simpsons in it from the start of season four to the end of season four, from summer of 92 mm-hmm. to fall of 93.
Oh, nice.
And so there is a lot in there. The big one, the Emmys one you just mentioned, is part of it.
Yeah.
So
it's that The Simpsons had definitely won Emmys, and that for that year, I believe Dan Castellaneta won for Outstanding Voiceover.
Oh, excellent.
Alf Clausen won for Outstanding Individual Achievement in Voice Composition, an Annie Award for Best Television Program, a Genesis Award for Best Television Primetime Animated Series.
That was for Whacking Day.
Yeah, and for Whacking Day, and a Saturn Award for Best Television Series. But this is the first year, I cannot believe this, that they wouldn't let... Up until this point, they wouldn't let The Simpsons submit for Best Series.
It was an amended rule that before, animated shows, no matter what it was, that included The Simpsons,
weird.
Could not be part of Best Comedy Series or whatever the official name
and people,
of that category.
I feel like that argument is old, that animation is a medium, not a genre, but this is still clearly that mindset.
Yes.
Yeah.
We can't have an animated program. Looks too cool. It can't compete with MASH.
So for season four, though, it was the first time they got it, and they submitted Mr. Plow.
Yes.
And it got overlooked.
And the Streetcar Named Marge.
Streetcar Named Marge. It was both those together. And there was a quote in a Variety story from when the nominations came out. Out in early 93, mid 93, of James O. Brooks, he was nice about it, but he was saying, even though animated shows can be nominated, there's still a distaste for them.
Yeah, so it's not that they didn't win, it's that they didn't, they failed to be nominated in the Outstanding Comedy Series. So that's what they meant, we will never win.
Yeah.
It's not an Emmy, it's the Emmy, the one they want. Have they won it? I cannot imagine they won it since then.
They've won Emmys since then.
But not for Outstanding
right.
Program or Comedy Program.
Well, so let me go back through the news here, starting with some of the earliest stuff here. So, December 15th, 1992, there was one of the first interviews that I could find, earliest ones I could find, of Matt Groening talking up the planned February release of the Yellow Album.
Oh my God.
It was the planned mega cash-in of the sequel album to Simpsons Sing the Blues. Now, we really dug into it in the classic Lasertime episode, Simpsons Sing the Blues.
That's a great episode.
Simpsons Sing the Blues is like just, you can tell it was greenlit on top of this phenomenon because they considered it a fad. And just cash in on the Simpsons things while you can. Who knew they'd have this embarrassing album, which I love. It was my second CD ever.
And in the interview, Matt Groening is saying, "Oh, we've got so many awesome people. Even Bart's going to sing a song with Prince."
It's nuts, like how many people are involved with that album.
Yeah, and if you listen to the music on the Simpsons Sing the Blues episode of Laser Time, you can hear it's mastered terribly. Everything is pitch shifted up, so no one sounds like who they're supposed to sound like. I don't know why. Maybe they thought the voices didn't have the range they needed in the character voices.
It wouldn't release, and I just have to imagine they dumped it out like years later.
Yeah, six years later.
So,
five.
if you were to have listened to that during season four, I think we would have been fine with it. Though we probably would have just said, like, eh, this isn't as fun as before. I don't like hearing Bart sing about how much school sucks or all these. Like, so, you know, but the Prince one, especially, like, My Name is Bart, which ends the episode, and it's actually impossible to find. It's been taken off YouTube now. Like, wow. I tried to find a clip of it here, but I couldn't find a clip of it. But it is on the that Laser album? Time episode. Mm-hmm. No, it's not so. What happened was it was going to be made with Prince. It is a parody version of Prince's My Name is Prince, but its name, My Name is Bart. And it's saying the same thing. And Bart, even in the song, says, I wrote this first. Some guy from Minnesota stole it from me.
Wow.
But the plan... So before the album came out, they released a review copy of the album, which did have the Nancy Temp version of it, which is what you played on the episode. But Prince was like, whoa, no, 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 you don't get to release this. So it's not on every other version of the Yellow Album that's out there. It is a lost track, and it's not particularly worth finding, but
no, I mean,
but it also came in with the, we talked about it on previous ones, that Prince was supposed to be the sequel episode with Leon Kompowski being Prince.
Right.
And then they didn't do it.
Like Prince got confused.
Yes, Prince thought his driver wrote a better script and refused to do the Simpsons script. And so he...
Forever weird. R.I.P. Prince.
I think they were just obsessed with the idea of, like, the Yellow Album. It writes itself. Like, just that very idea is what spawned this whole album. But it came out in 98, and it sounds like it's a five-year-old record.
Crazy,
I mean,
dude.
It sounds like TLC or something from that era. A lot of these R&B tunes.
I don't think we discovered it.
I just saw it on
years later. I found it existed.
I think we, I mean, we talked about it. We talked about Simpsons Sing the Blues, and then I told you, oh, the Yellow Album's even worse. Like it was lost to time. So, but listen to that Laser Time for all the our big going into it. So, October 10th, 1992, during season four. Tracy Ullman officially lost her lawsuit against Fox. And
I didn't think that got reported anywhere.
Good show.
She and the co-executive producer on the Tracy Ullman show sued Fox for the money of it. And if I were her, like, I'd be like, if I could get 4% of The Simpsons forever, I would spend all the money in the world to try to get that. But she lost. And they mentioned even the Variety thing that it was... It was an odd, awkward thing because James Earl Brooks was one of the witnesses against her, saying, no, The Simpsons was a separate group. We were making that separate from her. None of the Ullman people were involved in it, so she doesn't get the money.
God, I really hope we get a release of those in some form because they're online, but they're recorded off Comedy Central 15 years ago. They look terrible.
But the awkwardness was that James L. Brooks did that on the stand as he was preparing to film I'll Do Anything with Ullman in the movie as well as Julie Kavner. So it was, they mentioned that even the Variety thing of just like,
I'll see you on the set.
And then there was a follow up story a couple months later that Fox, in a pretty dick move, was like, hey, Tracy, you lost and you got to pay us $900,000 for making us fight you. But the judge threw that out.
Okay.
She didn't have to pay $900,000. But then also the Lisa's First Word was the highest rated episode of the season. They never reviewed, Variety didn't review Simpsons episodes, but they did have a review for this one. And their main thing was focusing on what a publicity stunt it was that they were pushing so hard at the time. You're going to hear Maggie's First Word if you watch this episode. And it's Elizabeth Taylor. It's so awesome.
I do remember that.
And it's an episode about Bart in the first place. So it's really misleading.
But it obviously the buzz worked. All the hype worked. On December 3rd was when Variety broke the news that David Merkin would be taking over as showrunner for season 5.
And you will hear Bill talk about that.
New boss.
Then, 4 days later, December 7th, Fox announced, after rumors swirling, that they had made their syndication deal for The Simpsons, but it wouldn't begin until fall of 94.
And that's like the serum that kept the body alive right there. It's signed right then.
Yeah. But the bullshit of it was, though, Variety even recognized it then, Fox sold it to Fox.
Yep.
They sold, so it
and
was
who
just
did they sell
like,
it to again?
Fox.
FX, yeah. FX.
So it's just like, well, FX bought our show from us for $500 million.
There's some shadiness involved in that. The Simpsons signs a record-breaking cable syndication deal. with yourself.
Yes. So 20th Century Fox TV signed a deal with 20th Century Fox Syndication, yes, in other words. Okay. Yeah.
To then put those mainly on the Fox broadcasting channels around the world. And they also got a special deal to... There was some broadcasting deal that, like, they couldn't be on from 5 to 6, or that it was a time slot that wasn't first allowed for The Simpsons. They were able to get around
Interesting,
that.
Yeah. Fall of 94 on, it was like 1 to 2 episodes a day.
If you live in a bigger city, yeah. I always loved going to my grandparents' house because they'd get 2 to 3 Simpsons every day.
And I was so excited for it at first, and then I was like, I can't. I feel like a phantom limb is on these shows with all these deleted scenes. Like, it drove me crazy.
Watching them again, you're like, is this scene new? Oh, no, I just haven't seen it in 10 years.
With that, I apologize to our patrons for the entire fourth season, of which I captured from a TV rip.
So April 16th, 1993, came the first news that Conan O'Brien had recorded a test talk show with Jason Alexander and Mimi Rogers while still technically under contract with Fox. But very soon afterwards, they'd be like, yeah, we're getting him, and he's
behind
quitting.
Behind the scenes, the Simpsons team was like, fuck yes, you have to go for this.
Yeah.
And the only hang-up was Fox, like the brass at Fox.
Because they signed a deal with him for 2 more years.
And just hearing the interview with Oakley, I didn't want to stop him, but his timeline on that, our timeline is like, goes in time in terms of production.
Yeah.
And he's talking about, when we started fifth season work with Conan, like, when by the time we saw the fifth season, Conan was long gone.
Destined for
NBC.
I mean, Homer Goes to College was his last episode he wrote of the first episode of production season 5 that aired, and his show was already starting at that point.
So
weird. He still owed Fox scripts, but I think they didn't want the bad publicity of suing the new talk show.
Fox got bought out for $200,000.
In the articles on Variety, they typify Conan as SNL writer and Simpsons producer. Conan O'Brien is going from a relative unknown. June 9th, we've got news that Brad Bird would be stepping away from his work on The Simpsons to do a live-action film called Brothers in Crime, which we all remember that movie.
What?
Just kidding, it never happened. But it was planned as it sounds to me from the description, like a Home Alone-style film of an older brother tells his little brother, convinces him that he was adopted. And then the little brother then runs away with like a group of criminals that he thinks are his real family. And so the older brother has to get back his little brother, and hijinks ensue.
Would he not direct a live action movie until Tomorrowland?
No. The Ghost Protocol.
Mission Impossible.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Best Mission Impossible.
The greatest Mission Impossible ever.
Totally forgot about that.
So Bird would come back, but he was like executive consultant. David Silverman was executive director of all the animation. And then lastly, of the Simpsons news, or tangential Simpsons news, June 30th, 1993, Al Jean and Mike Reese's The Critic is picked up by ABC for a mid-season debut January of next year. And so Gene and Reese had been working on The Critic quite a lot. Have been shopping it around. Originally thought it would be a live action show. Get it made into a animated show working with James L. Brooks. And this was finally the news that ABC was the buyer of it. And they were ready to get into business with them. Things wouldn't work out so well. But we'll get into that.
It does warm my heart that so many members of the community, especially the Laser Time community, demand a Talking Simpsons style critic show, which seems so doable in a different climate, and because there's a finite end to it, at least
we'd be done in half a year.
There's 24 episodes.
I'm not saying we'll never do that, but I just don't know how currently.
I wouldn't mind doing a pilot of just the first episode. We could see
that's
how it goes.
I don't even know who'd be on it. Maybe not even me, because Diana and Michael are like so gung ho about it that they've come up with names.
It could be me, you, critically. Me, Bob, Diana, and Michael. But I'm telling you, patrons here, I would. If I had all the free time in the world again, I would record. I would do one for every one season or two season wonder of The Simpsons writers who left.
I would do a Duckman show with just me and 12 listeners.
I would do that show.
I have all the DVDs.
I am. Yeah, someone was asked me about that again, a Duckman one. And I'm like, look,
into Duckman.
There are more Laser Time mentions of Duckman than
That's
there are episodes of Duckman. I'm a willing participant.
So that's it for the news. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was pretty much it. I think, let me just double check. Mm-hmm. Yep, Yellow Album, all that stuff. There was one commercial, but I think we're going to get into the commercials a little bit later.
Yeah, I got some commercials.
But, so one big thing we talked about with Bill Oakley mm-hmm. was the transition from 4 to 5 mm-hmm. and all the people that left. And Bob and I yes. did a bit of research.
We cracked the books on all of the lost writers.
I sort of asked the question on air, like, this show is so good and the talent behind it is so great and they all leave. What happened?
Yeah, 9 writers left. Who do we want to start with, Henry?
Well, I did them, so I'll start with the... Let's go down from
this
the top.
The changing of the guard. The people who made The Simpsons are leaving.
The showrunners, Al Jean and Mike Reiss. Mm-hmm. They had been on the show from... They were in season 1, mm-hmm. sort of left during season 2, and then came back, then became the showrunners for 3 and 4. And if you listen to them on the commentaries, it was an exhausting time to be a showrunner. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to make their own show. So Al Jean and Mike Reiss, who had been writing partners forever, they leave together at the close of the season, and they were splitting time on post-production with season 4 while also working on The Critic. And so The Critic would then premiere, like I said, January.
Those wonderful 9/11 towers.
Every episode.
Did not do very well. The short version is that they thought they were going to be on with NYPD Blue. Mm. And so instead, they were on after Home Improvement, which was a terrible connection to the show.
I figure that's a great lead-in.
I think they were either before. I remember like one episode ends with like, here comes Home Improvement coming up next after like all these horrible, like not horrible, but like racy jokes, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, they also, even in the first episode, they talked about that a plot point in the first episode is he has a one-night stand with an actress. And they said the ABC censors could not, like, they're just like, how dare you?
Yeah.
This will destroy
Tim America. Allen would never have sex.
Not with cocaine either. So a miserable time for them. The show was like canceled. It was put on hiatus for retooling. Mm-hmm. Came back, was canceled, got put back on Fox. Mike Reiss would frame it that the show was doing really well on Fox, but Fox didn't want to have a show on that they didn't have production rights to like they did with King of the Hill.
I think it's the same old story we hear for everything, like Mystery Science Theater. New president, it's not his or her thing, so they're like, get rid of it. And he name checks this person on a podcast. He's like, I don't care, I'll say his name.
Yes.
It's just like the Mystery Science thing, just like the idea of like an independent production group that kind of owns the series instead of the network.
Yeah.
Like Adult Swim built itself on optioning other people's shows, and once their shows got big, just kind of wiped them all away. Yeah. Anything we don't own and didn't greenlight, we don't want it on the network.
Yeah.
And so then C-Lab. But Gene and Reiss kept a Disney development deal going to keep making shows, and Gene and Reiss were both very open of like, it was the most miserable time of their lives. They got all these notes they never got on The Simpsons, and they couldn't stand it, and having... He said, like, every executive's full-time job was to tell him how to write a show.
Yeah.
And
you can't put into perspective how much money these Simpsons writers were being given to make something that maybe the world would even never see. I'm pretty sure it involved 6-figure contracts to go
produce
something that might see the light of day.
And their only show together at Disney that they got shown was Teen Angel, a 13-episode run on TGIF with a show that begins with a guy's best friend dying
and I remember
then
it.
Becoming his angel buddy.
I believe he is there to eat an old sandwich.
6-month-old burger, eats it, immediately dies. Marsha, I watched the first 4 minutes of it on YouTube. Marsha Wallace is the first angel he talks to.
Oh,
that's the connective tissue to
R.I.P.
Simpsons. And meanwhile, the God figure, who's actually Rod, God's brother, is played by another person we lost just last year, the actor who played Book on the Firefly.
Ah, yes. Wow. Ron Glass.
And over the next few years on The Simpsons, we see Al Jean slowly creeping his way back in after Disney, just writing scripts, sort of consulting, and then eventually taking over.
So Gene and Reiss had a special deal that they would also, it was kind of like a mini season of The Simpsons, they would get to create 4 episodes of The Simpsons that they oversaw. So
was that with the critic staff?
With a tiny chunk of the critic staff.
That Gracie money?
Like Round Springfield, The Simpsons Files,
Simpson Tide,
and
Sherry Bobbins.
I'm not saying it either. So then the split came. Al Jean in season 10 then just came back on as a writer on The Simpsons, just a regular producer. When Mike Scully left as showrunner at the end of season 12, Al Jean took over at the end of season 13 and hasn't left since.
Wow.
Mike Reese, meanwhile, after 1998, went on to do his own thing at Icebox.com, yes. If you remember early Flash cartoons.
Oh, God. Every Simpsons writer had an Icebox cartoon.
Yeah, and at Weekend Pussy Hunt, I remember watching for that, the John Kay show.
Yeah, so he did Queer Duck and Hard Drinking Lincoln on there.
I wish that would have taken off more, because the critic, remember, that's it. I think it's on the DVDs, but the Adam Films... short films that was supposed to be season three asterisk.
Yes.
But it's John Lovitz returning to voice a horribly animated version of
I forgot about Those that, were yeah. So bad. I mean, it's like they had to write characters out because Park Overall will not come back for web shorts. So it's like, I broke up with Alice, and it's like, I liked Alice.
Yeah, he also helped on Homeboys in Outer Space, The Oblongs, and The PJs.
Wow.
Wrote a kid's book called How Murray Saves Christmas, which got turned into an animated feature, or animated special. Mm-hmm. And then his most recent work, he helped on some of the Ice Age films, and then worked on the John Goodman Amazon series Alpha House.
I watched that for a hot second.
Yep. Huh. So that's them.
Maybe we can talk about Sam Simon. He's another EP higher up. You know, he's one of the three names you see on the Simpsons TV when
the
show starts.
He's got that creator money.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he did before he passed
away. And
I think,
his Fuck You tour.
Yes.
What a great
man.
Oh,
yeah.
Because he said, the rumor is I make $10 million a year from The Simpsons, but it's actually way more.
Yeah.
I'm giving it all away.
Going off of what he did after The Simpsons, I feel like he just wanted to be a philanthropist and give to causes with his oodles and oodles of money. But we do have one other show creator credit, the George Carlin Show. And I have a clip from George Carlin saying what it's like to work with Sam Simon.
Does he name him expressly?
But Sam, see, that the writer-producer club is a closed club. You can get in it, but it's kind of closed to a guy like me coming from the outside. Just didn't have the right chops for that. Didn't know how to protect myself. And the show was in the 60s in ratings, 65, 68 in ratings. You can't do what Roseanne did. She had a top 10 show when she fired everybody. I could have raised hell if I'd had a top 10. I didn't have that. I didn't have that power. Warner's was protecting Sam, because Sam was the property they could count on. Sam will do another show. Sam will find another Simpson. Sam's in our name. Carlin. Well, we try, and I mean, And so I never had the power, really. Never had the power, and didn't give a fuck. When they called me from Fox in my trailer and told me it had been canceled, I said, thank you. Because it was mid-season. I said, thank you for not waiting for the season to end. I said, I really appreciate it. I was so finished with that. It was so off the center. Now I come springing back from there like I'm on a rubber band. I'm back in my own creative world, 95, 96 now, and we're heading for book time. Book time starts to...
As a giant George Carlin fan...
I miss him just watching this.
Yeah, he came right out of this into... I would say it is where I discovered him after the George Carlin show, but a different, meaner... more biting person after
he
that.
Wasn't talking about baseball rules.
And there's one I can never find it when I want to. One great clip from the Carlin show that's all about him sneaking dirty words and like, you could easily say he cocked his hammer and gave him a hard blow. And you can just see 90 censors squirming. But I did read his book, and he is a lot meaner to Sam Simon.
Yeah, I mean, so this happens to a lot of people who aren't TV writers who make a TV show. They're not used to this world. They are seen as outsiders. Like Matt Groening was that guy, but he had The Simpsons. So they had to respect him.
And like Carlin said, Roseanne had Roseanne, so she could fire the guy.
We had Roseanne ratings.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I watched every episode of this. I don't remember any of it, but I remember liking it. But the other thing Sam Simon worked on, he was just a consulting producer on the Drew Carey Show. And what that means is, you just come in one day a week to work on jokes and stuff. Mm. And after that, he just was a philanthropist. And again, Chris, he did his, he came down with cancer. I forget what kind of cancer.
Stomach
cancer. That's a bad cancer.
Bad cancer.
Yeah. Pancreas, stomach, that's not good. But after that, he just sort of was giving his money away. He was a very great animal rights activist.
I would just say listen to his entire interview on WTF. That's one of those
one of the biggest vegan food banks in the world. And I think he has a Greenpeace ship named after him, one of four.
I loved his kind of FU to people saying well, oh, you're giving all this food to people, but it's
making them eat vegan.
It's just like, well, they don't have to eat it, and also I'm not gonna buy into the factory farm bullshit. Like, yeah. I was like, yeah, why should you? Also married to Jennifer Tilly,
yeah,
who even after they divorced, they were like bros the whole
time. I think
time.
In the WTF interview, she like comes in or yes, she comes into yeah. one of the interviews.
Yeah, that's in WTF. So listen to that definitely. Sam Symes is an interesting guy.
And he does. He mentioned he recorded an interview to be released posthumously, and I don't know that I've heard that or that it's been released.
Weird. I have not seen this yet.
And we talked about on Flaming Moe's his issues with Matt Groening as well.
Oh yeah, for sure, for sure.
So the next one I want to go to is John Vitti, who both left but also kind of didn't. Yeah. I actually was going to do John Schwartzwald on here, but then I found out, like, no, he was still in the staff room into season six. Like
smoking in a cafe somewhere. Yeah.
So John Vitti, writer of such episodes as Mr. Plow, one of their best. So he left at the end of season four, but would take Simpsons freelance work from then on. In 1994, he wrote for The Critic, as well as a one-season sitcom named Phenom.
Oh,
dude,
I
know
that.
Phenom yeah. a billion percent. The young tennis-playing girl.
It was a James L. Brooks sitcom, too.
Yeah, and it was one of the first times, like, Breaking Bad. Anna Gunn from Breaking Bad, her first show.
Right off of Down the Shore.
I believe I watched all of Phenom, too.
It's one of those things that, like, it was just always on at a different time slot for like 3 years, like, but never really a success.
In between freelance writing for The Simpsons, including all the clip shows, which he kind of had to be legally forced to do.
John Vitti, a.k.a. Pound Foolish and Pennywise.
We'll get to those, though. But in 1995, he joined Larry Sanders' Show, I believe, for the final season. Oh, he was a writer on that. 1998, he worked on King of the Hill as a producer and wrote multiple episodes. So, second season of King of the Hill.
Great.
Wrote for the Ali G Show in 2004.
Huh.
In 2007, did a season for The Office as well, The American Office. And then kind of became... Then he moved into CG films, starting with being a rewriter with Mike Reiss on The Ice Age Dawn of the Dinosaurs.
Unforgettable.
Then he wrote the first script for the Chipmunks movie.
Yeah.
And then was Mr. Angry Birds, wrote the script for the Angry Birds film, and is currently writing the script for Angry Birds 2.
So Angry Birds did well.
Yeah,
it's interesting.
It did do well. It's actually the most successful. Who'd have thought it'd be much more successful than the Assassin's Creed film?
We did a laser time on the most successful and critically revered video game movies, and that is absolutely one of them.
Wow, I had no idea. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'll move on to our buddy Jeff Martin. He is mostly known for the flashback episodes, the trilogy, or is it four?
He did a trilogy. There are four. B-Sharps is the fourth, but he only wrote three of those.
Okay.
He didn't do The Way We Were.
That's right, that's right. So he's known for that, Lisa the Beauty Queen, A Streetcar Named Marge, The Auto Show, just all over these great episodes that we know and love.
Mm-hmm.
But he created a number of sitcoms, all of which failed. And I don't want to sound like we're being mean, because more people watch one of these episodes than will ever hear any of our voices.
Yeah, it's true.
Just because of when they aired. So the first... Oh, go ahead.
I've heard TV producers like Scott Aukerman say, you're lucky to even make a show that anything gets on television is a triumph of the people creating it.
Yeah, especially, that they built sets and wrote scripts and hired people. Exactly.
Back in these days, I heard the Fox producer, I'm pretty sure he went back on this, but like if... If I and my team greenlight a show and we cancel it after two episodes, we have failed.
I've heard that.
Why would we ever do that? And the Fox head muckety muck said, we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to give our shows breathing room, give them time to succeed.
Yeah, you see shows
and I'm pretty
like,
sure he went back on that in a year. But but FX did that they called it the 1090. It's no longer a kind of mullet. It's if your 10 episodes are successful, we'll go into production of 90 more.
God, that's why we have so many anger management episodes.
Unforgettable anger management episodes.
Dear Lord. So Jeff Martin created two shows in 1994. The first one is called Hardball. He was a series creator. It is a baseball sitcom, 9 episodes produced, 7 aired. I could not find a single clip on YouTube of this.
And wow. I was very paying attention at this point. The other one I know.
It might have been CBS or something, but the other one is The Good Life. Okay, so there are 9 million entertainment things named The Good Life. This is one of them, 1994.
One of them was a black and white David Letterman period piece, I think.
Really?
Yeah,
okay.
It's The Good Something.
Okay. Huh. So this was a one-season sitcom, Drew Carey's first sitcom, playing a wacky side character.
Wow.
I do have a clip. This is from the era when you could still make a working-class sitcom. Like, you can actually write about working-class people on TV, which does not happen anymore.
Hey, Mary Lou finished the inventory. She's really on the beam.
Well, she may be on the beam, but is she on the level? As you know, I fancy myself a bit of an armchair detective. I've done a little checking on our Miss Murray. And what I am about to reveal may shock and amaze you. This isn't going to be like The Crying Game, is it?
Wow.
Yes.
That puts it right.
That's why I included that, included that clip. So, yeah.
Capsule. I, for some reason, I instantly liked Drew Carey. Just from the moment I saw him.
He's, he's very much in his falling down defense costume that he would wear on stage. God, I don't know if you remember his comedy act. He would dump water on himself.
Yeah, I loved his comedy act.
He was a madman.
I loved his bit about like eating a horrible burger that was just called like fuck you heart disease burger. Or also talking, another of my favorite bits of his was you would get... You get zits on your face, and then as you get older, they travel down your back to your ass.
I felt like the world wanted Drew Carey to succeed because he was in at least two shows, and the only way he became a success by calling it The Drew Carey Show.
Yeah.
And I know this because he's got a great cameo for no reason in Coneheads, like along the lines of Jason Alexander, but he didn't have a sitcom.
Yeah, it's one of those cases where it's like, we need to do something with this guy. Yeah. Let's put him in stuff and see what sticks. Yeah.
And now his son is a 10-year-old anarchist.
Yes, I love Drew Carey's son. Way to go, dude. So other things that Jeff Martin worked on, some scripts. Homeboys from Outer Space is a common thread in Simpsons writers.
I got
Simpsons money. What do you care about pedigree anymore?
I guess so. Is this like the American Red Dwarf or something? Could it be good?
I'll bring this up more, but I think for a lot of writers, if you just said like, I'm a Simpsons writer, they just said, well, let's hire them for at least 2 weeks so I can see what turns out.
Incredibly dissatisfied, won't take any pride in their work, but we'll have a Simpsons writer.
I feel like that will open any door. Just like, I want to write for the show.
I mean,
let
I was
me write for
shocked
you.
To see, like, I love Dana Gould. When they were marketing his show on IFC, Stand Against Evil, it's like from the writer of The Simpsons.
They didn't
mention him by name.
That's what you want to mention for sure.
And that was like 7-8 years removed at this point.
Even more than that.
Since the early 2000s, I think. So other scripts, Jeff Martin wrote Homeboys from Outer Space, which I mentioned. Men Behaving Badly, if you remember that sitcom.
Oh, the Rob Schneider vehicle.
Jonathan Silverman, Rob Schneider maybe?
I cannot remember.
Jonathan Silverman was a single guy.
He was the single guy.
God damn it.
It's such a different show.
But a British import that they... I remember that's one of those shows like Phenom that got at least 3 tries.
Again, like all these shows are exactly the same, all about how do dudes get around this like 90s time and stuff. They just want to have sex.
I mean, wow.
PC culture.
Yeah.
So he also wrote for Baby Blues. So 2004 is his last show creator credit. Listen Up, one of the several failed Jason Alexander vehicles about a sports writer. I have a clip.
Yeah.
I have a clip from one of the episodes if you want to play it.
It's, I mean, Jeff Martin was a big sports fan.
I really can see it in his work.
A baseball fan, so that's why it's coming up a lot here too.
So it's Jason Alexander and his wife.
So the ticket taker at the movie theater called your mail. Isn't that polite?
Yeah, if I was one of the Golden Girls. Ma'am sounds like he thinks I'm old.
Next time make sure you get the senior discount.
Hell, I must be dreaming.
You have got to be kidding.
All right, this never gets old.
So, y'all, how's it going?
Come here, we want to talk to you. Can you believe the nerve of these guys?
Honey, just ignore them. I've been getting this since I was 16.
Yeah, well, I got half a mind to confront them right now.
What's the other half thinking?
Walk away quickly. That's good.
No, don't walk.
All right.
Yeah. So the joke is they want to talk to him because he's a sports writer. They know they're not harassing his wife. So
he's basic. He seems like the brother of Jay Sherman. This is very Jay Sherman-y.
A little bit. Yeah. I mean, Jason Alexander can never not play a nebbish like wimp.
It looks like George Costanza took some fucking Wellbutrin and removed his glasses. It's a little calmer.
Yeah, he can never not be George Costanza. So yeah, that's Jeff Martin. He would come back to write like last year an episode called How Lisa Got Her Marge Back or something like that. Yeah. So that's one Simpsons script after 23 years or something. So
so the next one I'll go to is David M. Stern. He was the Selma writer. He wrote the big Selma episodes where she gets Jub-Jub or when Patty dates Seymour.
A wonderful Murphy Brown.
And famous brother of a wet bandit.
Yes, he is the brother of Daniel Stern. His final so he did The Wonder Years first, then went to The Simpsons. His last episode was Duffless, and then he left at the end of season 4, but would come back in season 9 and would write episodes like Viva Ned Flanders and Marge Simpson in Screaming Yellow Honkers, the Road Rage episode. In 2002 he became a co-executive producer on Monk, but for just one season, which makes you think like, what happened?
Like
what
he helped run the show for 1 year and that's it. Baby.
Yeah. In 2004, he wrote for a Fox sitcom, Oliver Bean.
I remember Oliver Bean, the David Cross narrated flashback to the 80s.
Yeah. I think it was like one of the highest rated premieres or highest viewed premieres on Fox, and then the show just was canceled immediately.
It was, it was like everybody's, I think it was a stab at Everybody Loves Chris, which is a show that ran forever that I never heard of the effect.
I've never seen it,
And then in 2010, he made his big return to animation as an executive producer on Ugly Americans for Comedy Central.
I've never seen
some of that. It's kind of like a half big Futurama.
Yeah, it's not that great.
Yeah.
It's got like, my ex-girlfriend's the devil, but really?
Literally.
That was canceled in 2012, and that was the last thing he has released since then.
Wow. So
Simpsons residuals are powerful, is the moral of the story.
Nobody has to work if they don't need to, unless they... My theory with Al Jean is that he went through more divorces than other writers, and that's why he keeps working. That's, you know, hey, Al Jean, I love you. We'd love to have you, Al. I don't mean to mock you.
Prove us wrong.
He's not a Patreon subscriber. We can throw him under the bus.
He's got the dough.
The next writer is George Meyer. He didn't write a lot of episodes in terms of being credited for them, but he's responsible for a lot of the best jokes.
Yeah.
He didn't do anything TV-wise after that. I couldn't find any credits.
Wow.
He came back to work on The Simpsons between 99 and 2001. And listening to commentaries on those later seasons, which people seem to hate, he is kind of responsible for the jokes you like the least. The ones that hurt the characters the most, the ones that betray their characters the most, the ones that are just kind of like a middle finger to the fans. I love George Meyer, but he seems to hate television and any kind of like status quo, I think.
I like how much he hates... institutions and the police.
Yeah, I'm not.
Those are funny.
George Meyer was called like the funniest man on earth by Time or something at some point.
One of the jokes they like hardcore credit him for in season 9 or 10 is when Kirk Van Houten has his arm chopped off.
Ow!
Ow! That was
it. It's one of my favorite jokes. That makes total sense. It's an established Simpsons writer.
I love that joke.
With a misdirect.
Yeah, I laugh at that now, but people hated that joke. They hated that joke. Like, you can't just chop a character's arm off.
No, he's also the guy who, on the commentary for the episode that ends with them getting the Loch Ness Monster and him like being at a Vegas casino, he's just like, all right, you try to write a funnier thing at 5 a.m.
It's kind of like throwing up his arms. So other thing he worked on is a show that was created by Mike Scull and his wife, one of the last TGIF shows called Complete Savages, about a single father trying to raise 5 unruly kids. Okay. I don't have a clip for this because who cares? That's basically it.
That was
so
a Mel Gibson produced show too, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, Mike Scully had this and like The Pits and a few other shows he created that didn't really go anywhere. This is, I don't know why George Meyer worked on this, a TGIF show of all things.
Him and Scully are bros.
Yeah,
they're really good friends.
I think that's what got him back on The Simpsons when Scully took over, really.
The last one I'm going to go to is the big animator that left. Other animators left, but this was the big one. Rich Moore, who directed from the beginning. Like, he was a season one director of the
show.
One
of the original three.
One of the original three. Director of, in season four, Marge versus the Monorail and Cape Fear. Probably two of the best animated episodes they'd had.
He's an amazing animator. Cape Fear is beautiful.
He left. Al Jean and Mike Reiss took him to The Critic. He was their supervising director there, and he also is just, he's such a funny guy on the commentaries because he's just so like blase.
Really is.
He's just like, I can't believe we did that joke where a giant blue whale drops on Jay. I don't know why we did that. So he went from there, after The Critic was canceled, almost directly to being the supervising director, the first supervising director on Futurama.
Right, right.
He was supervising director on there, directed multiple episodes. His big one was one of the best Futurama episodes he directed, was Roswell That Ends Well.
Yes, that's definitely one of the best looking, best written Futuramas to watch.
Just go with girls because you're supposed to.
How about these cookies, sugar?
I just want to mention, I was just looking through his bio. One of my I used to write a Christmas special blog that he's involved in Ralph Bakshi's Christmas Comes to Tattertown.
So I'm guessing he never worked with Ralph Bakshi again because nobody does.
Yeah, so
he is the Roger Corman of animation.
He really is.
So then he worked on random, after Futurama got canceled, he worked on some random episodes here and there, including Drawn Together, which should thank its lucky stars he even bothered to touch
that
shit.
Is the worst garbage.
The worst fucking show.
And then it
show.
Came back like 8 years later.
Movie.
I watched that movie.
Why,
it is
Henry? Why did you watch it?
Because I hate myself and my time. It is the piece of the biggest piece of shit I ever seen. Fan, and it was like flash animated, looks like awful, looks horrible, and it's just like, hey, now we can have tits, now we can have like blood shooting out of an asshole, and we can finally draw the
That's
asshole.
That's just what Drawn Together needed.
And here's a huge cock. We couldn't show you a huge cock before. And then they had the nerve on that show, that the moral of the story was that they weren't as successful as South Park because they didn't put in fake messages at the end. They take a huge shot at South Park of just like, South Park does all the stuff we did, but then they pretend to have some moral message at the end, like, eat my shit.
That's an incredibly strange product to release. Like,
we should have won, but we didn't.
You should watch it just to see them be like, why didn't us people like us more than South Park?
I mean, who doesn't like Adam Carolla?
I'm glad we don't have a mic rolling when I'm walking around here and just talking to you guys off mic. Then.
Drawn Together, the worst. He also directed an episode of Baby Blues and was the supervising director on what I think is a very interesting thing. Sit Down, Shut Up.
Yes. Real weird.
That is the series that
drove a lot of Simpsons people
that drove Oakley and Weinstein apart. Yep. They're friends and stuff, but I think there was a contract dispute.
It was that they weren't doing it fully with the WGA. Oakley did not like that and left, and Weinstein stayed.
Yeah, but they're still on good terms. I don't think they are writing partners anymore, though.
No. Remember on our interview, Oakley did say him and Josh are working on something.
Oh, I didn't know he included Josh with that. Awesome. Okay.
Offhand, I'd have to double check it, but I'm pretty sure I heard it.
They're still working together on stuff. But yeah, Sit Down, Shut Up. I remember going to a panel for that at a comic convention just because really it was a stealth. Hey, four people from Arrested Development, including Mitch Hurwitz, are here. So really, let's all ask them about season four of Arrested Development. And Mitch Hurwitz was just like, please just watch Sit Down, Shut Up. Consider that. And like Henry Winkler was there too. I was just like, I love you, Henry Winkler.
Another person is a victim of like, your show, the thing you're known for is so good.
Yeah.
Everything you've done after that will pale in comparison.
And I think it's an adaptation of a British show.
It is.
Australian. Not American.
And it was animated weirdly of like, photographs. It was animation on top of real life pictures.
Yeah, I need to go back and revisit it. I don't know if it was funny. I just didn't give it a chance.
It was funny.
A lot of crosstalk. Very, very strange animated show.
Yeah.
And pretty much everybody from Arrested Development in it, as well as Kenan Thompson and Tom Kenny.
Yeah.
And then lastly, he moved over to Disney Feature Animation.
Oh, finally.
Which is where he is a mega super duper star, directed Wreck-It Ralph, co-directed Zootopia, which has made $8 billion.
It's an amazing film, too.
And is currently working on Wreck-It Ralph 2. I love his... I can't give all the credit to him, but when he took over the Disney feature, when he started working Disney Feature Animation, that's when they figured out how to do CG that was not an imitation of Pixar, but close to as good, if not as good.
Getting closer to being Disney, the place that sets the bar, and I've said that
Zootopia,
on other shows.
Frozen, Wreck-It Ralph, all those things are
Wreck-It Ralph, Big Hero
Disney.
6, like, they're in a renaissance now, and I love saying it, Disney's the new Pixar. Pixar's cranking out sequels
Cars
to its
3,
classics, and Disney Pixar, I've heard they poach most of the regular Pixar staff in order to do this, but Disney is making way more interesting films than Pixar at this point.
And it was thanks to Wreck-It Ralph that I got to interview Rich Moore and geek out about The Simpsons, but I honestly, looking back on it now, I wish I'd only asked him Simpsons questions, but I was trying to be professional, just like, what about this with Wreck-It Ralph? What about this with Wreck-It Ralph? And then at the end, it was just like, I'm the biggest Simpsons fan in the world, and Monorail's my favorite episode ever, I love it.
What was calming about viewing Oakley up front, we are talking Simpsons, that's another show, this is the show talking Simpsons. We don't have to talk to you about anything else. That's not what we do. I don't have to study at all.
So yeah, Rich Moore, superstar. If you want to hear his voice, he voiced the gumball guy in Wreck-It Ralph.
Oh, really? Okay.
Gets put in Ralph's mouth.
I didn't catch that. Yep. So we have two more writers, another writing team like Oakley and Weinstein, like Gene and Reese. We have Kogan and Wolodarski. Kogan and Wallace Wolodarski. Jay Kogan has no show creation credits that I can find, but he has probably worked the most consistently as a writer for television immediately after leaving The Simpsons. Chris and Henry, you'll love this. He co-wrote the Dave Foley movie, The Wrong Guy.
Yeah!
I love that movie.
I completely forgot about that. Jay Kogan co-wrote that. I forget with who.
I remember Jennifer Tilly making the joke that everybody involved in that movie is named David. The director, the writer, and the stars.
Wow, Dave Foley just like walking away covered in blood from like fighting back body.
Really bad nosebleed.
I need to go back to that.
It's one of the funniest unsung movies ever.
Yeah, so I really need to. I love Dave Foley, Kids in the Hall. So other shows Jay Kogan wrote for, George Lopez Show, Malcolm in the Middle, Frasier, and I wrote a bunch of shit you've never heard of. It's all like Disney Channel-ish stuff. And also he's now writing for the School of Rock TV show, which I have not seen because I'm out of touch.
So Kogan and Wolodarski had a pretty quick divorce then. It seems
like it. So Wallace Wolodarski, born as Mark Wallace, which I had no idea, he sort of... took off into the film industry in a way. Like, I feel like he wanted to become a filmmaker. Mm. And his first movie was the movie Cold-Blooded from 1995, which starred Jason Priestley from 90210 playing Brandon. He played a bookie-turned-hitman. I could not find a single clip of this on YouTube, not even a trailer, so it's basically lost the time. But it did come out with a major 90210 star. It is a somewhat major movie. It
comes in that Tarantino wake where every movie needed a hitman.
Yes, to earn its exactly. R-rating. 95, exactly.
Yeah. Who would have thought 8 Seconds would be the more famous film?
And he directed Sorority Boys. I have the trailer. I don't know if you care to play this, but it's a Harlan Williams vehicle.
Oh, I do remember this.
Yeah.
College, a place where young men and women go to learn all about...
Go get her, boy.
Young men and women. And no one studied harder than Dave and his friends.
This is such a trailery trailer, but this is where they dress up as women to get in the sorority. The bosom buddies of Animal House comedy.
Basically, it had every generic trailer thing in a world where a dog reaction shot and a record scratch all in the first 20 seconds of this trailer.
It really was all of them, and that movie sucks.
He directed it?
He directed it. It's a movie no one likes, no one remembers. I don't know how he got attached to it. Maybe he just wanted directing work, but he's not a writer for the movie. But he has written a bunch of movies. He wrote The Rocker, which is the... who played Dwayne Schrute? Wilson?
Rainn Wilson.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that looked all right. Yeah.
It was not a bad film.
Yeah. That was back when he was being given movie roles, but I guess not really anymore.
I remember from the trailer there was a line in the 80s called, "They want their whatever back." Then Emma Stone said, "The 90s called, they want that reference back. They want that joke back."
That's not a bad joke. Yeah. So he wrote The Rocker, he wrote Monsters vs. Aliens, and one episode of The People vs. O.J. Simpson.
So
he's one of the best shows from last year.
He's kind of all over the place. So I mean, he has directed movies. It seems like he wants to be a director, and he's fairly young for a Simpsons writer. He was born in 1970 for being like, he was in his early 20s writing for The Simpsons.
And he was also the hairless guy in... he was also the hairless guy in the Darjeeling Limited.
Oh, right. He is credited for that. Him and his wife, I believe, are in that.
Yep.
So that is the end of the Simpsons Exodus. That's like
where are they now?
9 writers, 3 animation people. Yeah. I don't know. It's quite
an exodus from
and
the show.
If you hear a Bill Oakley special, he will tell you what it was like to just be in limbo with 2 other writers planning the future of the Simpsons with no boss.
Yeah.
I want to be in that room, go back in time, and just be a fly on the wall and hear the crazy ideas being thrown around.
Yeah.
So why don't we talk real quick about just what our favorite episodes were of the season? My favorite still is Mr. Plow. Like, I came into season 4 remembering all these great episodes, and I think if you listen to me, there were some episodes where I definitely was, I was honest of like, I remember this better than I actually was, or this was kind of weak, and this is getting ahead of ourselves. We're counting production season 4. I would almost say Cape Fear is better than Mr. Plow, but I just love Mr. Plow so much. Like the story of Homer and versus the Plow King, the Adam West appearance, all the snow stuff, the animation by Jim Reardon. It is still
wall to wall perfection.
It is close to the perfect.
The barely noticeable sorcerer references, which is a movie I only now love.
Yeah.
Having seen the original Wages of Fear, it's beautiful. Love it. I'm with you on that. I guess if I had to. I just don't know.
I can give mine if you want to think about it.
I have an MVP award for this season, and so all of his episodes, anything involving him makes me laugh. It is a guy. I spoiled it. For some reason, Itchy and Scratchy, the movie, it's inside. It's an animation fan's delight.
Oh, it really is.
And since we're doing this under the auspices of a show, but like I am allowed to relive my past through these, and so in terms of my own nostalgia, like that kind of excitement for a cartoon or a theatrical product is something I'll never get to experience again. But I do get to experience through Bart, awaiting Itchy and Scratchy the movie. I don't know. That's the one I'll probably rewatch the most.
Yeah, for me it is. I think it's Homer the Heretic. It's a great, solid story that just immediately just kicks off in the first seconds. There's no B plot. It's all about Homer's relationship with God, and I think I can credit this as to me helping me come to terms with religion as a kid, realizing I didn't have to care, and that was fine. And it's okay if you care, but I'm just saying not to anger anyone out there. And I'd say second place is Selma's Choice. I think it has all the fun Duff Garden stuff, and I love, as I said before, I love bland, mediocre, boring characters. and the humor that comes out of them, because they're very hard jokes to write. It's all about the specificity of boringness and, and blandness. So that, with Homer eating the sandwich and all the great Lisa getting high stuff, it's just a treat. I love it.
Yay. Well, I was going to give my MVP award this year.
Yeah, I want to hear this.
Yeah, I want to hear
this. Last year, it was Barney. And I think this is because we're fresh off Krusty gets canceled, but it's fucking Krusty.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the stuff we love digging into, the references we love digging into, is that Krusty is pretty much an interchangeable variable for anything in the entertainment industry they want to make fun of. But he's a clown show host. That's a dated thing I love. But also an egomaniac in this dumbass job. It just, everything, I don't know, everything about him.
I'm Krusty the Clown, and I don't like you. I'm Krusty the Clown, and I'm going to kill you.
Didn't even pull the string that time.
So he does so many different things in this season, and they all make me laugh.
Yeah, they really had a fixation on Krusty in this season, I think.
He was the new Burns.
And he gets to host SNL.
He asked me to host the show. I said, Lorne, why me? I mean, I did just star in my first movie with Marvin Hagler and Tova Borgnine. Yeah!
Perfect, perfect beat.
Ugh.
Yeah!
Love all this stuff. Worker and Parasite.
This is where you would watch... Well, kids, this is where you would watch Itchy and Scratchy, except they're on the Gabbo show now. So, here's Eastern Europe's favorite cat and mouse team, Worker and Parasite. What the hell was that?
I love the distorted music at the end.
Yes, and that he gets to sing.
Try to hide, break on through to the other side. Yeah! What was I on?
Camp Krusty, all that stuff, man.
Hey, kids. Hey, boys and girls. Only 4 days till my anniversary show. 29 years. And when I came on, they said I wouldn't last a week. And you know where those reviewers are? All dead. How you doing on there, fellas?
Stomp, stomp, stomp.
Anyway, here's a clip. Now, why do they call this a urine monkey? Just found out.
Oh, he's Johnny Carson. He's Mickey Mouse.
Season 4 is when they decided this can be anything we want it to be. There are no more ties to it just being a kid's show.
But it rounds out Krusty in such a way that he's infinitely understandable at this point and can appear doing anything a megalomaniacal entertainer.
Yeah. Every showbiz commentary they want to do, they can do through him. And it's also, I think, often them sharing their anger with just fuck you, critics. Fuck you for not
As we this. Point out in this exploration, it's done to criticize other forms of entertainment that are happening concurrently with these Simpsons episodes.
And Krusty is often used to sort of, as for the writers to work through their issues with executives and people in business like that.
Yeah. Which would continue after season 4.
Oh, for sure.
And their constant disdain for award shows.
And now, to present the award for outstanding writing in a cartoon series, Krusty the Clown and Brooke Shields.
Well, here we are. The star of the Blue Lagoon and me, the blue-haired goon. What the... That's terrible.
Cartoons have the power to make us laugh and to make us cry. Wouldn't you agree, Krusty?
First of all, my hair is green, not blue. I got nothing to work with here. Nothing.
He has an anniversary special. He gets canceled.
So much
Krusty
stuff.
Everything like a showbiz personality can do happens in this season. Oh, and it gets better from here on out.
It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's my award for MVP.
Krusty is easily the MVP.
Yeah, I would give it to him.
You have a real Dan Castellaneta bias in these MVPs.
Man, take it away from me next season. Feel free.
No.
I don't know who. We're just getting started, so I don't know who gets the best time to shine in the fifth season.
I would give the runner-up award to Superintendent Chalmers.
Yeah.
What an odd remark.
But just in one episode. We'll see a lot more Chalmers this season.
Just having him in the show now is great. And again, as we learned from Oakley, that's his favorite character.
And now I know why. I never heard anybody break it down like that, but that is... localized in your kitchen. Like,
he has to believe the crazy things that are happening or else he will also go crazy. It's a great description of him.
It's pretty beautiful. Does anybody have anything else? I had some dumb commercials to wrap everything
up with. I'm out of stuff.
I'm pretty much done. This was a really great season. Yeah. I love doing season four. Yeah. I actually have watched ahead a couple of the production season five ones, and I am just like enthralled of like, I get to talk about Homer Goes to College. I can't wait. Can't wait. So the show is only more exciting. Mm. Season four was awesome to do.
How do we feel about the argument season four is the best season? I still think it's great, but I watching it, I'm like, no, I still like six and seven the most, I think.
This hurt it for me. I felt beforehand that I like season five more than four anyway. Mm. We'll see how I feel at the end of season five. But yeah, I hate to knock the show that we've loved so much. Mm-hmm. We made a show about it, but season four had problems that you can't like not look away from. Like, there were obvious rewrites or like brain drain or tired guys, and just and you, it's not just the clip show.
I was taping and watching every episode almost every day at this point, so I didn't have any of the problems I do now. But like when you guys started highlighting the ADR animation changes, like that is so evident.
Yeah,
and oftentimes it breaks whatever wall I have while watching a cartoon. Like, Grandpa's been talking for 2 minutes, and none of his mouth has sunk up ever.
You can see the strings, really.
Yeah, it is a little bizarre, because I would have championed these early seasons as my favorites, but as we go on, it just keeps getting better and better.
And it's amazing, spoilers, that season five would not drop in quality. After losing 80% of the staff that made the show great, they would keep that up.
It's weird. I'm guessing Groening or Brooks deserve some credit there for keeping everything together.
With a showrunner who had never written for the show before.
Yeah. We didn't mention it, but James L. Brooks kind of left. He definitely wasn't involved in season four like he was one, two, and three.
Yeah.
But it's hard to say he left, so I didn't do the whole thing for him.
Right.
I had some dumb commercials. And one thing to point out.
I thought you'd have these. I had this too.
The Simpsons 1992 annual issue came out, and I didn't have Simpsons Illustrated. I just didn't see it, but everyone I knew had the 3D issue with like the 3D Bart's Dream Home.
Oh, that's an amazing drawing. Yeah, very Life in Hell.
Craig Bartlett had a Hey Arnold comic in there, which was originally produced by Matt Groening's dad to show you how deep nepotism goes. Because Craig Bartlett
is
married to the real Lisa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lisa Groening. Or now Lisa Bartlett, who knows?
Yeah. But he did go on to create Hey Arnold, but Hey Arnold I was introduced to in shorts from somewhere, I forget where, but he had comics in the
comic
Simpsons.
Comic strips are in Simpsons.
He had shorts on Sesame Street, actually.
Yeah. Yes, yes. Hey Arnold was in Sesame Street. Fresh off a penny from Penny's Playhouse. Mm. Weird.
And that show was good, so I'm not even knocking Arnold or like, oh, this guy got to make a bad show. Hey Arnold was a really good show.
It's coming back?
Yes. Yeah. This is a whole podcast, but... There was supposed to... They set up the entire last season of Hey Arnold to wrap up everything in a big finale film that will reconnect Arnold with his parents. They spend two whole episodes setting up this film, and then it was all canceled.
The movie failed and got rerouted.
The first movie failed, so they're like, we're not making another
Doug's
movie.
Doug's first movie shat the bed, and they were like, no more of this.
Hey Arnold, the movie failed.
Oh, there was an actual movie.
Oh, yes.
Wow. Oh, yes. I had no idea.
And it was a big failure, so they killed it, but now they're finally bringing it back. It's why Craig Bartlett... Fans were just like, Craig, just tell us what would have happened. It's never going to get made. But Craig was like, no, I won't tell you. We could still make it. And he was right.
And I grabbed some commercials, and this is just to wrap us up, I suppose, because these are kind of dumb. But I did find it odd. We keep talking. This is like the era of this. We talked to Bill, and we forget that The Simpsons isn't that highly rated at this point. Like, Home Improvement is kicking its teeth in every week. So is The Cosby Show.
They go from the top 10 in season one to moving to Thursday and being in the 40s and 50s for the rest of their run.
But TGI Fridays, you'd figure the likely spokesman would be somebody like a family, an Urkel. Instead, I've never seen this before. It was Homer.
I've never seen this either.
I don't think these were in my area at the time.
The Holiday Sampler Platter.
Platter.
Spicy, tangy buffalo wings.
Buffalo.
Fried mozzarella and loaded potato skins. Bring the family and friends.
Who cares about them? Give me.
Christmas at TGI Fridays. Everyone looks forward to Fridays. Offer not available to cartoon characters.
No!
Again, fun commercial. I never saw it.
I've never seen it either.
I like that Santa's Little Helper is in the Christmas one. It's a
Christmas commercial. I don't know of any other Christmas commercials for The Simpsons.
It is funny. It's like this horrible man who just eats garbage likes our food.
Yeah.
This is a terrible Ramada commercial.
Today on Hotel Views, we join an average American family in search of this summer's best values.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
No.
Follow The Simpsons to
Ramada,
animation. Where you'll find free Simpsons fun stuff for the kids all summer long.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
No.
And with every stay at Ramada, you get discounts on great Simpsons merchandise.
It's huge at this point.
I want to go to Ramada in 1993. Yeah. That looks great.
Those mounts are really like almost season 2E. It's the mounts that stretch back past the neckline, which they had really.
It might not be reused animation, but it's no new dialogue.
It's over animated, I think, which is what you normally don't
see.
That
was the sad part, because I was like, I'll go look at the video games. We discussed that on the Retronauts.
Yeah, Bart vs. the Space Mutants.
That
episode
slowly trickled onto other platforms, as did, I think, other. Yeah. Simpsons games. There are no 1993 Simpsons games.
There are 9 versions of Space Mutants to torture yourself with.
Virtual Bart would be the next one in 1994.
Wow. Yeah, along with Itchy and Scratchy Golf on the Game Boy, which... Yeah.
I didn't see this because it's a regional commercial. Canada exclusively got Kentucky Fried Chicken commercials.
Ooh, chicken.
Homer's escaping the plant.
Good animation, though.
I'm gonna make it!
Ah! Yes.
Going somewhere, Simpson? Ah! What have we here? Popcorn, chicken, fries, Pepsi, and a handsome collector's cup? If I ever see that buffoon's face again, I'll...
Get your free Simpsons cup with the purchase of a KFC popcorn combo.
We didn't even have popcorn chicken in America at this point. This is a Canadian exclusive.
KFC Canada seems way better than our KFC, man. They were smart enough to hire the Simpsons.
Yeah, with new animation, new voiceovers.
I find it odd that so someone had to name all the items in the food meal, but it's funny that Burns knows what it is. It's like, Smithers, what are these fried confections?
He's forecasting our current president, his love of shitty fast food.
Help me, Dad. They're after me because I swiped the 7-Up.
You darn fool! They're giving them away for free!
What the...
Get a free 7-Up with a 15-piece bucket, only at KFC.
You're moist all out, sir.
Everybody is Dan Castellaneta.
It's an American... I mean, you didn't even see that, but the biggest one, I want to say, foreshadows the Who Shot Mr. Burns thing. But during the summer, there'd always been Simpsons Butterfinger commercials.
Yes.
But here...
The BBs were very busy at that time.
Peep this one.
I've been robbed.
You say it was crispity, crunchity, and peanut buttery? Oh, yum.
Who laid a finger on Bart's Butterfinger?
Oh.
There are 6 suspects, but only 5 alibis.
What's an alibi?
Don't! Find out who doesn't have an alibi, and you could win $50,000. See these rappers for details.
Homer Simpson. I mean, Homer...
So that's great animation.
Please look that up. I want an entire episode. I wish the movie looked like that. Just it's just great hand drawn.
I pointed that out to you guys with Space Jam too. Like, why is the commercial animation better than the movie?
Because they had to make 20 seconds of it.
Yeah, 20 seconds and just a budget. They probably asked for a bigger budget than they needed.
I couldn't dig into this deep enough to figure out how it worked.
Who stole the Butterfinger?
The suspects were Burns, Lisa, Otto, Krusty.
I can tell you who it was.
Well, that's the thing. They not only have a commercial that tells you who it was, they tell you who, like, Bart will tell you specifically who was the winner forever.
Live from Springfield to find out who laid a finger on Bart's Butterfinger and who will collect the $50,000 reward.
Wheel them out, boys.
Homer? Krusty!
Krusty falls down the stickers.
Here's who won the $50,000 reward.
Nancy Fredholm from Hudson, New Hampshire. The one effective detective, ma'am.
That animation was amazing.
Yeah, it was, because like you can't see it, but Maggie notices Homer has
the
big feet. It's another reference to...
It's a lot, and it's also Maggie being active in it, just like, I think... Whoever worked on that kept that in mind for Who Shot Mr. Burns.
Maybe,
think that
yeah.
Very,
and I did,
but
I,
the animation of just Krusty tilting his head laughing, it's perfect. Some of the best they ever done.
It sucks that it's limited to commercials, the best Simpsons animation.
For some reason, I remembered that later, but that was 93, man.
The ending aired in season 5.
It was a holdover to,
It started in July.
So
in between the breaks, and who knows what season 5's wrap-up will look like. I also, the weirdest merchandise I found.
Oh, cool.
The fucking weirdest was, and I can't find many, SimpsonsCollectors.com is really thorough. Somebody might need to update the code a little bit, but I love that site for merchandise. I never saw this, that Maggie had a line of baby stuff released in 1993. There is an official Maggie pacifier, and there is an official Maggie, like, hard but soft radio thing with Maggie all over it.
I've never seen this.
And it has a Simpsons baby line. Insane. Insane.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. Man.
And what else do we have?
That's it, brother.
That's it? Okay, I saw something on your other screen. I didn't know if that was 93 or not.
We're saving that for the next season,
that'd be next year.
Okay, we'll wait for that. So,
We're talking about Bart's Guide to Life, which all of us read, I think, a whole lot.
It was basically Life in Hell for Kids,
that book. Yeah. I paged through it 8 million times.
It's fantastic. But thank you so much for joining us. And if you're listening to this, you paid us, probably. I'm hoping you did.
I hope so.
So thank you so much for giving. It's because of you that we were able to make this show and talk to amazing people like Bill Oakley and point out every tiny atom of information we can find about The Simpsons, which we did throughout this entire special. So thanks for listening. What do we do? How do we close these Patreon episodes?
Well, I mean, they already are giving to Patreon, so we don't. But if you are new, the post for this one, I'm going to make sure to have links to all of the previous wrap-ups and our season one. So in case you're just joining us and haven't listened to our season one episodes, which are much shorter, and you can see how much we've changed since those
I was listening to some season one and two episodes just on a whim, and I was like, how did we ever get by with just 35 minutes of a talking Simpsons, having done 90 minute ones at this point?
It's really weird. And I think it's to this, I just didn't think the jokes would outweigh my love of debuts. I'd rather discuss the references than the debuts. And there's no more debuts of anybody, really.
Soon Disco Stew will show up.
Yeah, there we go. We got that.
I mean, these episodes after season one and two get so much more into references that you kind of have to. Where we got more into. Here's the commercial they're talking about.
Yeah.
But I think maybe it's someone younger, like Josh and Bill being on board. I got most of the references after this. Like, this is clearly Terminator and Jurassic Park, not Rear Window and Citizen Kane.
Well, they were young guys in their 20s, seeing movies, watching TV, like being part of, I guess, youth culture, but not really. They weren't that young, but
obsessed with Batman. So it'll be you probably know most of the references moving forward.
Perhaps so, but we'll explain all as we go.
But
I can't wait for season 5, baby.
Maybe not the reference to the Toys trailer coming up.
That's right.
So yes, thank you so much for listening. We'll be back in a year on Patreon, but we're here every week. Oh, 6 months. Oh, that's right. God, I'm sorry. I don't even know how our show works. We'll be back in 6 months with the season 5 wrap up. Thank you so much for listening, guys. See you then.